Okay, first off, I'm sure you all noticed my major screw-up on last week's episode. When I was talking about the puppet Gary Ganu, I quoted him as saying, "No news is great ganoos," when actually he used to say, "No news is good ganoos." My apologies. And I actually got a hold of Gary Ganu to let him know about my mess-up, and the guy told me to fuck off. How not nice, Gary. And I had mentioned the Rubik's Cube last week. And just today, I read that the world speed record on solving the cube is 3.13 seconds by some 22-year-old kid. I can barely pick it up in 3.13 seconds. And I mentioned the 1970 movie Brewster McCloud, Shelley Duvall's first movie with Robert Altman. But how could I neglect the fact that my man Stacy Keach was in it? He plays some, like, old rich asshole in, like, prosthetic makeup. And man, Altman is such an interesting director. He really knows how to, like, construct a scene. He was just a complete pro. It's also got a funny opening with the MGM logo appearing, but instead of the lion roaring, you hear someone saying, "I forgot the opening line." Also near the beginning is just this amazing version of the hymn, "Lift Every Voice and Sing," based on a poem written by the NAACP leader James Walden Johnson, often referred to as the Black National Anthem. But holy hell, there's an out-of-this-world version by the dynamo Ray Charles with some amazing background singers. It's on Spotify and whatnot. Please check that out. And the poem it's based on is just so awesome. "Lift every voice and sing, till earth and heaven ring, ring with the harmonies of liberty." And I swear, if you listen to this Ray Charles version, you will literally start dancing in your living room like a Pentecostal preacher. Do Pentecostal preachers even dance? I'm not really sure, but you'll be like a swinging Jimmy Swaggart. But it's the type of song where if I heard it in a restaurant, in a grocery store, or wherever, I would be like, "Excuse me, but I just have to get up and dance to this." And briefly, there's a funny line in the movie Brewster McCloud. Someone is killing people in the town, and this hotshot detective comes in to help. All the victims have been shit on by some kind of bird, and the detective gets the bird shit analyzed. And this older, kind of gruff detective says, "Now I suggest we drop this bird shit and settle down to some old-fashioned police work." And I know I've mentioned trying to get a hold of Kurt Russell, trying to get him to join me and fight the upcoming artificial intelligence battle. I finally heard from him. He sent me a restraining order. But I just know that's his secret way of telling me that he's on board. Now I'm just waiting for Michael Biehn to get back to me. Okay, let's begin.
You are my density. You are my density.
Let's see, did I ever mention that I have the worst parking spot in the world over here at my apartment in Schittsvale, California? I'm basically stuck in some covered area outside, and it's literally impossible to see if anyone is coming from either direction. So I usually back out roughly at the speed of a snail and just kind of hope that if there's any assholes driving down the street, they see me backing out. I've almost been hit a couple times, and it always adds a little bit of stress to start the day, and stress is something I already have plenty of. Like many of you, I'm always worrying about something. Often it's shit that there's no use worrying about, and usually I'm able to calm myself down, but my default mode is generally to be on edge. Like a quick example, I'll be moving back to Los Angeles end of the year. So naturally, I'm worrying about, you know, finding a decent job. Okay, that makes sense. And then I'll be like, well, when I do find a decent job, will I be able to find a decent apartment? Will I be able to meet someone? When will I be able to retire? What day and what year will I die? Okay, joking on that last one. But, you know, our minds can be devious at times. A lot of times I do like my anxiety and I use it to get excited about things, the anticipation of seeing a movie or going out to dinner with friends. But that same anxiety can turn on you in a minute and just make you come up with some crazy ass shit. Like my mom went to Hawaii a few months ago. I didn't talk to her the day before. I was probably doing some dumb shit that day. So the day she was flying, I had no idea when her flight was landing. So it was getting later in the day. I started getting mildly nervous. I texted her and got no response. And then as it got later, my worries increased. And I looked up flights from Sacramento to Hawaii to see like when she should have landed. I also literally was Googling Hawaii plane crash. I called my sister a couple times and she didn't answer. I texted her and no response. So at that time in my head, I was like, okay, my mom's plane crashed and my sister's husband had killed her. I wasn't like frantic per se, but close. And as you can see, the best psychiatric nurses are only a hair's away from being psychiatric patients. So I finally got my sister on the phone. She didn't really have any info or anything. And then I got a text from my mom, like while I was on the phone with my sister, it just said, "We landed." And all of that completely unnecessary and honestly irrational worry was gone. I tend to make up these things in my head when I have too much free time or when I'm just completely stuck in my head. And I've gotten better at texting, kind of, but in the past, I've doomed a couple relationships by texting a girl and just not having the patience to wait for a response. And I know that's so annoying. I've been on the other end of it, too, with a couple girls that like would incessantly text me and it would drive me nuts. So admittedly, I'm better at texting, but if there's some kind of reason to get worried, my system will generally just like lock onto that feeling and go full speed with it. And again, I can hear you saying, how is this guy single? But I always figured it's better to be like too sensitive and too alive than be dulled and unexcited. And this episode won't be very long, even though one of my listeners said, hey, do longer episodes. And by one of my listeners, I mean my imaginary friend, Jimmy Flapjack. And I think I mentioned being frantic a bit ago. And speaking of it, please watch the diminutive, sleazy, yet talented Roman Polanski's Frantic from 1988. Harrison Ford plays a doctor visiting Paris with his wife. She goes missing. She's played by Betty Buckley. The opening credits are a classic. They're in a taxi and the credits like roll down the screen, almost like ending credits. There's an insanely slow dissolve revealing Harrison Ford and Betty Buckley in the taxi. And please listen to the title track, Frantic, by the master of soundtracks, my man, Ennio Morricone. Anyway, Harrison Ford is taking a shower, and when he comes out, his wife is missing. And Polanski, like Hitchcock, is just a master of the split diopter lens, where there's like an area of focus close up, a blurry line, and then an area in the background that's in focus, too. It's a classic move. Brian De Palma also has some great uses with the split diopter. Again, another great band name, Split Diopter. I came up with another band name. I think it could be a great punk band name. In nursing school, you know, to apply pressure to the fingernail to see how long it takes to refill with blood, it's called capillary refill time. But in short, you just call it cap refill. And there you go, bingo. Cap refill sounds like some kind of 1990s Washington, D.C. band with a loose relationship to Fugazi. That sounds about right. But back to the movie Frantic, Harrison Ford delves into the criminal underground of Paris to try and find his wife. He's a bit clueless, but tough. And determined, and he kind of mirrors the George C. Scott character from my beloved movie Hardcore, in which he's a religious man who comes to L.A. to find his daughter who's gotten mixed up in porno. Another cardinal rule of life, do not fuck with George C. Scott even if he's dead. His ass might come out of the grave and still kick your ass. The actress Emmanuel Sainer is kind of a street kid who helps Harrison Ford along the way. She's actually Roman Polanski's wife. But in the movie, she's kind of more of a guardian angel, really. And there's one of my favorite scenes where she just kind of subtly flies into the scene and lands next to Harrison Ford. It's so well done, kind of under the radar. And yeah, the movie it's one of my favorites. So check that out. And speaking of George C. Scott coming out of his grave, there's a seriously gory and just kind of shocking Lucio Fulci horror movie from 1980 called City of the Living Dead, a.k.a. Gates of Hell. Basically, the gates of hell open and the dead arise from their graves. There's a famous scene where a guy's head gets drilled, but the scene I've never forgotten is where some actress basically is kind of, you know, vomiting her guts out. They reportedly used some animal intestines, and let me tell you, that actress did not get paid enough for that role. Christopher George is the lead actor in it. He acted in a lot of stuff, and he kind of starred in some horror movies later in his career, including 1981's Graduation Day and the terrible but awesome Pieces from 1982 about a serial killer on a campus. Pieces has the immortal tagline, "You don't have to go to Texas for a chainsaw massacre." And you're going to love how I wrap this one up. Yes, Christopher George is buried again along with George C. Scott at Pierce Brothers Cemetery in Westwood near UCLA. I'm going to LA in a couple weeks. I'm going to take a friend to the cemetery. I'll give you any updates. And while we're on the subject of horror, I did see the new horror movie Long Legs with Maika Monroe, Alicia Witt, Blair Underwood, and Nicolas Cage as the killer, sort of. Osgood Perkins directed, and get this, he's the son of Psycho's Norman Bates himself, Anthony Perkins. And Osgood Perkins actually played the young Norman Bates in Psycho 2. But anyway, Long Legs is pretty damn good. It's shot very well. You kind of get weird glimpses of Nicolas Cage early on. But it's edited very well, looks great, and it adds to the tension. Maika Monroe underplays her role well, and yes, Nicolas Cage is over the top, but in the best way, and it totally works. It's got a compelling story. It's not like super gory, but it just has a great spooky vibe. And if you're paying attention, you'll probably spot the big twist about midway through. I mean, it's kind of the only thing that really makes sense, really. There are a few plot holes, but it's so worth seeing. It's just like a real horror movie, and blessedly it wasn't produced by Blumhouse. Not that I have anything against Blumhouse, but all their movies kind of have a similar vibe. Some are good, some are bad, but it seems rarer and rarer these days that a horror movie isn't produced by Blumhouse. And this is so random, and I remember I was at a play in New York City many years ago. Jason Blum had just started producing films. He was gaining some attention, and I always keep up on horror movies and stuff. So there was a guy and a girl sitting in front of me. He was looking at his phone, and I wasn't, like, eavesdropping. I was just looking at his phone. What the hell else was I supposed to do? I already looked at the fucking playbill. But yeah, he opened up an email, and I saw that it was addressed to Jay Blum at Blumhouse, and it was about a movie or something. I kind of peeked over to look at him, and I said, holy shit, that's Jason Blum. He was just kind of starting out then. Now he's a fucking massive movie producer, for better or worse. And on the subject of plays and annoying people in general, I hate when someone in the audience unnecessarily chuckles to themselves or kind of self-servingly kind of, you know, reacts to some reference or joke to just kind of signify, oh, I get that. I don't mind when people laugh out loud genuinely, though it does take a lot to actually make me laugh out loud. But you know the type I'm talking about. There's always a few of these assholes at every play, and I seem to always sit by them. And here's a couple more annoying types of people. Sometimes I'll be at work outside on a break, and some idiot will have his phone on speaker, and he's like yelling into the phone so everyone hears what he's talking about. So it's like, now I have to hear this asshole and the asshole he's talking to as well. Put the fucking phone up to your ear. That's how phones work, especially in public. No one wants to hear your bullshit, okay? Your problems aren't bigger than ours. You're not more interesting or something than us, so just do like the rest of us and talk on the phone like a normal fucking person. And this next one just drives me nuts. Like when you're in a waiting room or something, you know, we're all naturally glued to our phones, but one asshole has his sound on and you can hear him clicking and texting and whatever. It's like, motherfucker, do you hear us making noises like you? No, you don't, you dumbass. So silence your phone, okay? Do whatever nonsensical shit you're doing, but do it silently. Some people are clueless, some people don't give a fuck. And maybe it's just the way my parents raised me, but, you know, be considerate, you know? Once in a while, I'll say something if someone's making a bunch of noise, but generally I just sit there silently simmering, ready to burst. Speaking of simmering, at the change of shift at the hospital, we have to give report to the next nurses coming into work. And one time a nurse asked me how the day was, and I described it as a slow simmer. Which was honestly kind of perfect, and those slow simmering days can be the most exhausting because generally there's not an explosion, there's just a bunch of little landmines that you have to successfully navigate throughout the day, and that can be taxing. Sometimes it's almost better if there's like a day with one major incident, and then the rest of the day is fairly calm. Jesus, it almost sounds like we're talking about a war, and I'm no way equating psych nursing to being in the military with people fucking shooting you and shit, but, you know, you do get adept at gauging situations, looking for a slight heightening of emotions or whatnot as a nurse. Usually you can see something coming, but every once in a while, just be like, wow, that was completely unexpected, which I think is just the nature of things psychiatric. I remember I worked at a county hospital. There was a fairly psychotic patient that had been there for years. One of the female nurses had known this patient and thought she had befriended him. And then one day, like out of nowhere, he came out of his room and started trying to attack her. And this guy was big, maybe an inch or two bigger than me and probably 30 pounds heavier. I was kind of in shock and I was a bit slow to respond, but I jumped on him and somehow picked him up off of her, like with his hands behind his back. I was just kind of in like Superman mode. It took a lot of strength, but just to remind me that I'm not a superhero, I ended up getting a hemorrhoid in the process. I guess I like exerted myself so much, and I'll never forget the next couple of days at work working a 12-hour shift with my ass completely hurting as I was walking around. And speaking of war and battles, I love the Cy Twombly artwork entitled Synopsis of a Battle, primary title from 1968. It's just a bunch of scrawls on a blackboard, but it's actually like troop movements that supposedly refer to some battle in which Alexander the Great defeated some Persian army. I just like the kind of erratic, almost madmanish quality of Cy Twombly's stuff. Check it out. And really quickly, back to Long Legs. The actress Alicia Witt plays the mom in the movie, but she looks great. But I absolutely loved her in the great kooky John Waters movie Cecil B. Demented with Melanie Griffith and Stephen Dorff, who I run hot and cold on. It's about a bunch of like renegade filmmakers who kidnap a big time actress to work on their film. I always find something to like in John Waters movies. He's genuinely weird. We'll talk about him later. But anyway, Alicia Witt is just a doll, and it was nice to see her in Long Legs. And I will do an episode about my supplement problem at some point. I told my mom the other day how I was getting so tired of preparing my envelopes full of vitamins when I go to work or when I go on a trip. It's utter madness because I basically have like four envelopes full of shit per day. Empty stomach AM, lunch, empty stomach PM, and dinner. You know, it's starting to make sense that I'm single maybe, right? But anyway, my mom was like, well, maybe when you hit rock bottom with vitamins, you know, I'll have to change it up or reduce or whatever. And the phrase, when you've hit rock bottom with vitamins, has anyone ever said that before? But anyway, I was like, Mom, I ordered ground up ant capsules. I think I've hit rock bottom. And she was kind of like, yeah, you do have a point. But all the supplements and shit are just kind of part of who I am, you know, along with movies, music, and newspapers. I'm a weirdo, but I know it. Okay, briefly, every once in a while at hospitals I've worked at, someone has said, oh, that patient is a VIP, you know, very important person. And you know what? The idea of a VIP is something that irks me to my core. Well, because someone has a bunch of money or they've donated to the hospital, that's supposed to, like, affect their treatment. When someone tells me someone's a VIP, I say, okay, cool, I don't give a shit. Especially at a hospital, the one place where everyone should be treated the same. I try to treat every patient the same at the hospital. In fact, I tend to go the extra mile for like homeless patients. I check on them a lot. I try to get them snacks and stuff. And I try to make their stay as pleasant as possible. Because, man, they sometimes have been living in the streets or in shelters. And I completely feel for them. And it tears me apart, especially when someone homeless is actually like super nice and kind. It's like, damn, I don't know if I could be like that if I had nothing or if I was homeless. And I've actually formed the greatest bonds sometimes with homeless people at the hospital. And yeah, maybe to the higher-ups or the money people, having a VIP is important. And I've seen them go to extra lengths for these people, and it kind of disgusts me in a way. I know money rules the world, and the world kind of opens itself and caters to VIPs. But in my world, you know who's a VIP? Someone who's nice. Someone who's decent. Someone who's genuine. And yes, sometimes that might be a millionaire, but it could also be a busboy or a cashier or even a homeless person. We're all people, and generally people with a lot of money come from wealth or they've been extremely lucky or someone has helped them out. But having money shouldn't give you respect. It shouldn't matter. And someone who flaunts their supposed VIP status immediately turns me off. So there. And to close, you know, life sometimes can feel like a continual downhill process. But I always try to feel like things will get better. I know one thing for sure. Thinking negatively does absolutely no good. As my man Double Z, Zig Ziglar, said, you can't climb uphill by thinking downhill thoughts. And yes, I know I'm generally always referencing older songs from the 80s or 90s or whatnot, but you know, I actually heard a great new song. It's from the band Pom Pom Squad, a New York-based band fronted by Mia Baron. The song is called, yes, you guessed it, Downhill. It has a 90s vibe, but it's just so catchy, great vocals, and it just grabs you from the get-go. So well done, pom-pom girls, keep it up. And you know the phrase, it's all downhill from here, could kind of be seen in two ways, like the hard part is over and it's an easy ride down from here, or that something was going right or successfully and now it's gone to shit, now it's going to go downhill. So, you know, go with whichever one you prefer, the former or the latter. And don't be like the boxing announcer and fuck up which is which, okay? Downhill, looks like downhill from here. I'm still wondering how I made it through the year. I've been trying to find the difference between the feeling and the fear, but it's unclear. I'm breathing into my chest. I wake up shivering cold. Look at the blood on my hands. Feels like I'm losing control. Through all the tears and the sweat, feels like I'm starting again. I never said I was done. I'm coming back from the dead.